ever find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Now tuned into the greatest. Turn the music up in the
headphones. We're back post WSOP with the Wicked Chops podcast in the WPT offices with Adam Pliska. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for inviting me on the show.
So before we get into poker, let's talk about the time that you bailed Todd Bridges, Willis, out of jail. What happened?
Well, let's see. So my background was actually as a in production and as a producer, but I had joined Albertan Productions. I think the first show that I ever worked on was Charles in Charge.
Okay.
Right afterwards was The New Lassie.
Okay.
And at the time, he was brought in to play the sheriff.
Okay.
On New Lassie.
So, Todd Bridges was brought in to play the sheriff on New Lassie.
Because okay. I believe Todd probably needed a job at the time, and Al probably hired him. Different Strokes was over, okay. And so, in my very early days, I was given many interesting assignments, but I remember it was probably in the first few weeks where they said, take this envelope of cash and bring it over to XYZ. And so I said, but what is it for? It's bail money for God. So that was it. That was my intro to Hollywood.
That's the way you got initiated into the Hollywood scene. So you've had a pretty interesting background, actually, before poker. You've worked on, as we just went over in your office before the podcast started, a number of iconic shows, really, at least if you're a child of the 80s, like myself. give us some more of your background, your work experience pre-WPT.
Sure. So I was, I met a very famous producer named Al Burton, who'd worked with Norman Lear to do many things, All in Family, Different Strokes, One Day at a Time, Charles in Charge. They did the Jefferson, Silver Spoons, all of those great 1980s shows. So I came on basically because I was an usher. I was a high school student. I walked into a program that they were doing to salute, ironically, The New Lassie. Okay. And I had asked if I could go. They said if I was an usher, I could save the $12 to get in. I used that to ask a question at the event, and afterwards the producer came up to me and said, I thought you asked a smart question. And I said, I'm with the local newspaper. Can I come in and talk to you? I said, sure. So 3 months after that, I went into his office at Universal. I could not drive, so my parents drove me from Orange County to Los Angeles. Go into the gates of Universal. I come in with my pad and paper, and I say to him, thank you for answering my question. He said, what can I do for you? And I said, well, I have these questions here, and if you could answer them for me. And he said, stop. He said, what I'm guessing is that you were a young man trying to get into my office and that this whole thing is just your attempt to get in here. And he said, if that's right, let's start again. And I said, that's exactly right. I just want to work. So so that started a wonderful relationship for 7 years, and I worked with him on a number of shows, including Baywatch, and I produced a show called Out of the Blue. I helped develop a show that and have the Emmy certificate for a show we helped develop called Win Ben Stein's Money.
I remember Win Ben Stein's Money.
And
brought Jimmy Kimmel to the world.
There we go. I know. He was brilliant. I mean, really, it's the writers on that show and Ben and Jimmy Kimmel really made that show. So I didn't stay for the production after I sold the show with Al and the development, but then afterwards went on to I was producing a show in Florida, and my girlfriend at the time said, I'm not waiting for you anymore. I'm going to Berkeley. And I said, if you go to Berkeley, I'll go to Berkeley. So I packed up and went to Berkeley and got my law degree.
Okay. And how did that relationship turn out?
That relationship did not continue. It it ended, I think, the last day of my law school. But I did get a good degree and ended up working for the governor of California at the time and the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. then was offered a position at the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee as their head legal counsel for IP.
Okay.
For, ironically, Orrin Hatch offered me the position. I thought about it. I went out to D.C. I was born here in Newport Beach, California. I do not do very well in the cold, and said, I'm going to have to pass.
Yeah, I'm out of here.
So I, one of the head counsel did not get my message. I called a week later, and he said, where are you? I said, I'm not coming in. Yeah. But instead, I encouraged them to let me do a documentary that I wanted to do on the making of the next Supreme Court justice before Chief Justice Rehnquist had stepped down. We became friends, and in the meantime, my friend Steve Lipscomb had been taping these World Poker Tour events.
Okay.
I said...
So we haven't hit Travel Channel airwaves yet. He's just filming events.
He is filming the events, and I would call him occasionally, and I'd say, are you still doing that scam where you're taping these events and there's no distribution outlet? Because this didn't seem like television to me. There's this guy named Lyle Berman, and he's offered to put up $3 million. And it just all sounded shady to me, to be honest.
And it probably was a little bit.
And there probably was a little maybe a little bit in here. And so at so he said, you know, would you come in? We actually got television now. And he said, would you come in for maybe 3 weeks and do some legal stuff for us? So I came in for 3 weeks, and 3 weeks turned into 3 months. And then Lyle Berman, who was the chairman... Mm-hmm. And was also the chairman of Lakes Entertainment, said he wanted to go public and bring a poker company public, which sounded completely insane.
Yeah.
So I didn't know what a poker company was.
Right.
But that's what we did. And by August of the next year, 2014, we brought the first public, poker company public. So like you, I had the experience of going to the NASDAQ and ringing the bell and going, what the heck?
What in the world?
What's going
How
on
did this
here?
Happen?
Why is my head like 14 feet in the side of a wall?
what was your existing relationship with Steve Lipscomb? We at one point early in our Wicked Chops existence had been critical of Steve and some stuff, and to his credit, reached out to us, squashed everything, explained I guess the things that we had issue with. But I was impressed with Steve for doing that.
Yeah.
What's the background? How did you get hooked up?
Well, the great thing about what you just said is that Steve Lipscomb, who I have a very close relationship and on me, he is the person who officiated at my U.S. wedding.
Wow.
So I was married in Japan, but I also had a U.S. wedding, and he officiated there. But Steve and I don't share exactly the same political beliefs. We differ on many things. We have many issues of disagreement.
Because Steve had that blog on, it wasn't TV Guide, it was a TV site, and I believe he was espousing a lot of political stuff. I was very surprised to hear coming from him and somebody with it. I guess I wasn't expecting it. So that's not surprising, I guess.
No, yeah. Steve has always taken Steve is very passionate about it. But it does not surprise me that he reached back out to you or he... You had a community because he is a wonderful human being, and once you... And I've introduced him to all of my friends who share my beliefs. Mm-hmm. And they've all become friends with him, and they all share the same arguments with him as well. So that's what we all do. We argue with each other and then go out and have a great time.
Okay. So previously, before WPT, though, you had worked with Steve in some realm?
Steve actually became the producer of Ben Stein's Money.
Oh, okay.
When Ben Stein's Money.
Didn't know that.
And I was then... I was at a law firm for a short time, a very good law firm, Sonnenschein Nathan Rosenthal, and while the people there were fantastic, it is a wonderful firm, I highly recommend them, I was not cut out to be a day-to-day lawyer. I was so interested in business, and I was in litigation for a while, so I would wake up every day saying, oh my God, what is that? It's another emergency. And then I realized, that's not an emergency, that's my job.
Right.
And the billing every 6 minutes and all, not really something for me. So I left there, and I decided my grandmother was dying at the time, and my And I said, I just want to go spend some time with her. Did not know my grandfather died 6 days later. Spent a wonderful last few months with them. Was walking down the street, bumped into the futurist Alvin Toffler,
okay,
who wrote Future Shock.
Yep.
And he said, hey, we're doing a, we're creating a business with Jeff Apple, the producer of In the Line of Fire, and Carlos Slim, who is the richest man in the world. I knew him from my days in production, and he said, I hear you're doing law. Do you want to come on and be our lawyer and business fair? I said, okay.
Yeah, sure, why not?
So I did that, and then Steve Lipscomb came on and produced some material for us as well.
Okay, so...
That was when we really got to know each other.
Okay, yeah. So boom years here with World Poker Tour.
Yeah.
When the country is poker crazy, yeah, it's the...
Money is falling from the sky. Anyway...
Literally falling from the sky. It's like you can't... Yes. You cannot walk through a casino, yes, and not bump into a way to make money off of poker. What's life like within the WPT offices? I mean, is it just you guys can't believe yourself, you're pinching yourself every day, or are you planning this, like methodically planning out the future of the business? What's day-to-day life at the World Poker Tour?
You know, it was a mix of both, really, because on one hand, we had a very... As you know, business plans never work out as you want. But we were very serious about what the brand, mm-hmm, meant and what we were going to... And because we had some money...
Right. At that time, Travel Channel's paying you, actually, per show.
That's right.
And you're getting the site fees.
That's true. We're getting... And we're getting a significant amount for the Travel Channel.
Right, it was like $450?
We were at the... Yeah, and we're... bringing in a lot of money. No poker show has ever seen that much money, I guarantee.
And then
soon we were going public and we have a lot of cash, right? So we were able to say, this, we're going to take this brand serious and we're going to make sure that the artists that it went into the building of the brand and the protections of the brand, and we weren't going to just license to any little person who came off the street, right, although we did things like barbecue covers and crazy... lid top disposal things and stuff like that. But we had great licensees, you know, of the brand very early on. Mm-hmm. You know, Scientific Games, who did the lotto tickets. And,
I remember that.
And, you know, from apparel and U.S. playing cards, who did, mm-hmm, very high-quality chips because we didn't want to do, low chips. And it was a time we could not just catch up with the amount of opportunities that were coming, either from shows or working with casinos, or working with the online sites. And it was Wild West, right? I mean, I will not say who the owner is, but it was a owner of an online site who most people would know, who called me to say, would you hold $1 million for me in your bank account and hand it to Ben Affleck and give it to him overnight if I give you X amount of dollars?
Oh, yes.
To which I did not, lest the IRS came and wondering why I had an inflow of $1 million.
$1 million. Yeah, because, what's $1 million?
That's right.
And then just as... I want to say the bubble burst, but 2006 with UIGEA, and you got a bunch of sites pulling out, and the financial model would say
evaporated.
Crumbled. But let's say evaporated, and you had to change the business because Travel Channel is not paying per show anymore.
That's right.
The ratings that they were originally having during the boom years are not quite as high as they were.
Yep.
So it's time to just reevaluate the business
and the poker online sites
and
out just producing their own
and they've
shows now.
Gone off and done their own thing.
Yeah, and they're making basically infomercials.
Right.
And so the value of a poker show in the market had substantially dropped.
Let's talk about that. This is something I've never explored on a podcast or in a so it goes from you getting paid substantial amount from Travel Channel per show to Starz and Tilt coming in and time buying everything and producing their own stuff.
That's right.
How much did that hurt?
And Party Poker.
And Party Poker, too, right. Owner. That's right. How much did that hurt the financial model of World Poker Tour, where these companies are coming out and actually buying their way on air, and you're used to a model where you're actually getting paid for the show. Did that impact you guys negatively?
It was in the first 6 years, there were so many points that was, okay, I guess the gig is up.
Right.
Because it felt so amazing, right? You have this,
no way,
tidal
this can be true.
Wave of things. Every day something incredible is happening. And so you always expect something to happen,
right?
The shoe to drop. And there were so many of those points. Now, that was a very big point because there were two steps. First of all, when the Department of Justice seized some money from the Travel Channel and .coms, we all woke up one day in the industry and went, oh, guess we can't put .com on there. And so then the invention of the .net.
Right.
So that was a big shock,
right?
Because suddenly we had a business model also built on casino fees that some were with some online sites. Remember, we had all of the online sites in the early days. And then, to your point, as a lot of television, and there was a lot of television. At one point, there was 15 television shows out there. And as you know, that the quality, the spectrum was quite wide, but that wasn't the purpose. The purpose was just to get ad-funded television out there and as much footprint as you can get. So it was tragic to us. We had license fees that were first being cut in half and then down to a quarter.
Right.
And then it was, you could just look 24 months in advance and you were like, I know how this is going.
Yeah.
And it used to be in those early days that in May we would sit there and go, are we going to get picked up? We're going to get picked up. We had multiple year deals, but they had options.
Because after travel, you had, I think you had a season on Game Show?
Game Show, that's right.
And then I think it was just straight from Game Show to Fox Sports Regionals, right?
That's
right. Okay, so.
We had two on Game Show, and then we went over to FSN.
Yep.
Yeah. And so it was very tough. So we had to quickly figure out how are we going to exist? And that turned into a sponsorship model. And basically, for years, we were then sponsored by other online sites, if not in the U.S., in
the overseas,
including, you know, we had Full Tilt in the U.S.
Right.
And overseas, we had everybody. We had Poker Stars, we had Party Poker, and everything else.
Right.
I remember one of the discussions that I had with Steve is Steve Lipscomb, is whether or not we should have Party Poker sponsor us in the online market overseas. And the argument against it was we were going to go into the online business overseas, and how could we enter into a competitor? And I remember saying, we're just not competitors.
Yeah.
They're huge.
Yeah.
They're enormous.
Yeah, I remember, I want to say this was like 3 or 4 years ago, a friend of mine that used to work here, Jeff Holsey, I know was doing some platform evaluations, and I think something was even launched in the UK, I want to say, with some little liquidity. And I mean, the amount of money that you need to compete, obviously, against the Stars or Tilt and Party, it's just where are you going to even get it from? So, as
I said at that time, I said, basically, what we're doing here is having them not aim their cannons at us.
Right.
So if we do go in the, and we had multiple attempts to go and start online properties.
Right.
And we were not successful. We were very much not, despite the fact that it meant that I, as the general counsel at the time, spent a lot of time in Alderney, and I spent a lot of time in Malta.
Okay.
And
as long as you didn't have to spend a lot of time in Isle of Man.
Oh, that's so funny. You are the second person who's brought that up, and now I'm going to embarrass you.
Okay.
So the first time, and I'm going to tell you this story,
all right,
and
you're
going to be embarrassed. We sell the company to Party Gaming, and I'm in Gibraltar with Steve Lipscomb and Jim Ryan, who is then the CEO of Party Gaming. And Steve Lipscomb has this terrible diet that he can't eat anything. Gluten-free, sugar-free, nothing can be eaten. So every day we're going to the one place in Gibraltar that has no taste that we're eating. And Jim finally looks to me and says, do you just want to go to a McDonald's? And I said, yes, let's go. So we walk over, and he said, well, at least it's not as bad as the Isle of Man. The Isle of Man. Oh, my gosh. Never been to a place like this. I was stationed there. The food and some of the... I met some people. And I said, Jim, you're saying this because you know my mom's family's from the Isle of Man. He said, love the place.
It's my favorite place.
Love the place. My entire family of my mom's... Not related to gaming. Okay. As you see, I'm a mixed person. My mother is... My mother's family lives in the Isle of Man in Castletown, Isle of Man.
And is actually from Isle
of Man. From Isle of Man, been there since the 1500s.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, I'm going to walk out now. That's been fun.
No, now I have two great Isle of Man stories.
Yeah, you got two in-your-face Isle of Man. That's great. But to the WPT's credit, your credit, obviously, and other leadership that helped as well, not only survived the initial, let's say, 2006 fallout and the changing TV markets and the landscape, but then post Black Friday, Friday comes and then your sponsorship model goes away with a Starz or a Tilt or somebody that is a primary sponsor.
Well, I would say there is one other very dark moment in WPT, or potentially dark moment, which was 2008. In 2008, the company valuation had sunk to less than a dollar, starting at $8. At the high point when there was a $900 million takeover offer, now it was less than a dollar. And we were really wondering, what is the – I mean, I can tell you now that there was a lot of question of whether the WPT would exist at that time. We had – all the online sites had their own affiliations. Mm-hmm. And so the question is, how valuable would we be in the future, especially if we couldn't take bets in the U.S. We were a public company in the U.S. We couldn't take bets in the U.S. Our parent company had licensed gaming licenses here, and we weren't able to compete overseas. So then became the big sale of the company. For myself, I was actually stuck in – I'd lost my passport in China, so I was stuck in Beijing. And I remember saying there was a number – that was thrown out, and somebody said to me, okay, well, what would you do if we got that number? The question for a public company is, what is right for the shareholder?
Right.
And the number that I came up with, that I proffered at the time, I will tell you, was a single digit in millions, obviously, for a WPT. It had gotten to that place. Now, a year later, we got it. There was a bidding war.
I was going to say, there was a bidding war. I remember, I'm trying to think back to the post because we were covering some of this. Was there a company called Mandalay Entertainment
Entertainment that had a very dramatic at the shareholder meeting.
All of a sudden, out of nowhere, that one came in. But then it looked like you kind of settled what feels like was the right
company. Yeah, we settled with the right company, and boy, it worked out well because we knew each other well. They were our sponsor for a number of years internationally. They knew that, but they also had the same risk profile.
Mm-hmm.
Party Poker had taken that before it was BWIN Party. Right. It had taken the approach of, okay, we're pulling out of the U.S. Yeah. We're doing the regulatory model.
Yep.
We had to do that because we were a public company and our parent company had gaming licenses. So it was a very good fit. They understood our product well. And I remember in those early days having this discussion. I said, you just bought a great house. It has a fantastic view. It has a wonderful foundation. But it needs a new roof.
Yeah.
And it needs some landscaping. And boy, do we need some paint.
Yeah.
And to their credit, they reinvested in the product and allowed us to reshape the business the way that it hit the three main constituencies, which is the broadcaster, the casino partners, and the players, and give them, basically we went out to everyone and said, guys, give us another chance. We want to work with you and recreate this business. And when you say other leadership, I'll say it's more than other leadership. To me, I was in an easier position. I didn't found the company, so I didn't have to take pride and ownership in that way. We said, if you think we're making a mistake, tell us. If you think that things should be different, tell us. We had a lot of input from players. We had a lot of input from the press. A lot of input. We had a lot of input from the casinos and working with our broadcasters. And we just changed. We were open to it, and we took that investment, and we, you know, the way that we changed the show, the way that we presented our tournaments, mm-hmm. became, you know, what it is now.
Okay. Did they give you a lot of autonomy to do this?
Tremendous amount of autonomy.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, the early days, the question was going to be, is this just going to be a marketing vehicle for their company?
Right. A natural assumption.
That's right. Yeah. And everybody thought, okay, this is just going to be, it's going to be EPT. And the answer was, we had a tremendous amount of autonomy. Within 24 months, we had proven to other online sites that, and so they started to send people to WPT events mm-hmm. in Europe. And you know, we've seen with the growth. You know, we started with, I think in season 8, that was about that time, so 2009, we had 14 events, maybe 12 were TV events. And we will now, this year, have something close to 70 events.
That's great. So let's talk about this year, because there's a lot of announcements that came out. One in particular that I like a lot, which is the Alpha 8. Great. Always been a fan of the high buy-in events, yeah. and if nothing else, you know that you're going to probably get some star power, some wattage that
Absolutely.
You know people are going to watch in the events. And that's part of the reason why, too, is I think people are just attracted to bigger numbers. So, you know, a bigger buy-in event with a guaranteed, or not necessarily guaranteed, but a large first-place prize just yeah. captures people's attention. So let's talk about the Alpha 8. What was the genesis of the idea and the concept in general for our listeners that maybe aren't familiar?
Sure. So we have the WPT has the main tour, which everybody knows, and mm-hmm. then we had started the regional and national mm-hmm. events, which were the lower buy-ins. But there was certainly this market that was out there for high buy-in event. We clearly didn't invent the a super high roller. They were mm-hmm. occurring in pockets throughout oh, yeah. the world. And so the idea of putting this under a consistent tour is something that we knew that we could do because, it's very expensive to run a tour, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, but we have a tournament. We have that in place. We have the structure in place.
So this is something that you do regularly anyway.
That's right.
The WPT Championship. And,
absolutely. Right. So we could combine that, and we had done super high roller events at the Bellagio, mm-hmm. connected with our main tour. But to put this together and to show what I think will be a fresh new audience, because one of the things that we need to continue to do is bring people into this and keep their excitement. People that not only are the people that watch every single day, but people are like, hey, what is this all about? And I just gave an interview yesterday where I said, when you were a kid and you were playing in Little League, you weren't inspired by Little League by watching Little League.
Right.
You were inspired by watching the major leagues.
Mm-hmm.
And here, it's the same thing. When you're talking about enormous prize pools and betting that sometimes can be, you know, you're betting a house mm-hmm. and a hand, you don't need to be a hardcore poker fanatic to be able to sit back and go, this is just...
Yeah, appreciate the drama of it.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. So we're that was the concept here, which is let's fill that void that's out in terms of the tournament, and set that up and bring show people where this is happening. Make this a truly global experience. So we will have one in the U.S. and mm-hmm. one that's coming here in August to. To Seminole Hard Rock, but what I foresee is that you will see this throughout the world in multiple continents, in Asia, in Europe, in Africa,
mm-hmm.
And that's what we want to do. We want to bring this out, and it's going to look different also than most poker tournaments. I think most televised poker that you see has a similar look to it.
Yes.
This, we're having a different approach. I don't know if you've seen some of the renderings yet. If uh-huh. not, we'll get those to you today.
Okay.
It's a much light, airier feel, a much more modern
okay.
look to it, to the set. And it allows us to kind of focus on personality and also the location. I think Lynn, we announced that Lynn Gilmartin was going to be kind of going to these places and working not only as the anchor that Kimberly Lansing kind of created so well on WPT Main Tour, but also go back a little bit to those days when Shauna Hyatt would used to take you out and show you the properties. About the properties. And,
beautiful Fox.
And the area around it as well.
Okay. Great. So not only that, but not necessarily a different TV distribution partner, but new distribution as well through Fox Sports One.
Yeah. Major. So major announcement for us. Two major announcements. First is for the first time in WPT's history, the ratings have been so good, basically from season 8 to now.
Let's talk about that, because I don't think a lot of people are aware of that. Yeah. You don't hear a lot about it. People focus on WSOP, ESPN, Main Event numbers, and have not been a lot of focus on World Poker Tour numbers. You were actually telling me before we started this that ratings have been substantially increasing.
That's so right. From season 8 until the current season, we've actually seen gross distribution ratings increase 100%. So the first year when we made the investment, we changed, and there's a number of reasons why I can go into it, but it's how we market.
Why do you think the rating? Because, you know, in general, partly due to the oversaturation, I think, of your stars until produced shows, there's just a lot of poker to consume on TV.
That's right.
And I think it, you know, had a watered down effect. Yeah. Do you think it's maybe some of that just leaving the market post Black Friday?
Well, so you're... that helped. But also, if you look from season 8 shows to season 9, everything changes, right? We really, first, I used to say, we used to tape the show with God created six people sitting at a poker table. That would be like going to the Academy Awards and only putting your camera on the stage. But Angelina Jolie is sitting in the front seat, right? Well, now, a big chunk, we're showing playdown. Mm-hmm. We're showing how people got there. And that helped a lot. I actually think that was one of the major changes. Got people intrigued. How did people get there? Mm-hmm. Showing it more like a sport. You know, I created something early on when I told the group saying, this is going to be yes programming. Younger, edgier, sexier. Mm-hmm. And that's really what we did. You know, we brought in Tony Dunst, who did the Raw deal. That was a risk because, you know, we basically let Tony do what Tony wanted to do.
Funny story on Tony. When you guys were, I think, down to maybe your last five or six, I can't remember what the exact number was, we were doing our This Weekend poker show on Jason Calacanis's This Weekend Network. Mm-hmm. And so I'm flying back from Vegas to L.A. every week to do the show. And just like a couple days earlier, one of the guys that was part of, I guess, the selection committee had reached out to me just for not telling me a name of anybody involved, but who do you think would be somebody good for this? And I threw out a couple names, and Tony was actually one of the names that I had thrown out.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's like, you know, he's just kind of, I think he's got a good perspective, seems like a sharp kid with a good head on his shoulders. I'm on a flight with Tony. We happened to be sitting next to each other on the Southwest flight from Vegas, and he's coming out for what was ended up being one of his final auditions for Raw Deal. And so I'm pulling it out, and they could tell he didn't want to talk about, like, you know, that's what he was coming out for. But actually, having spent some time talking to him on the flight, I called my friend back. I'm like, hey, you know what? I had thrown out Tony. I just talked to him. This is like the guy that you need to pick. This guy is like, he totally gets it. Absolutely, totally gets it. So I thought that was a great segment.
He was... In 20 years of being in the television business, he was the best audition I've ever seen. It was because he was completely unaffected by the cameras.
Yeah.
Completely himself. And then when I got to know more about Tony, then the risk was, do you let Tony just be Tony, right? Because you're going to get people. First episode, we had people saying, oh, he's just talking
about it. You need the controversy. You need people talking about it.
Well, that was it. I mean... We said that we were going to take WPT from the Pollyanna-ish, everyone is a hero, everybody is a... And we were going to show, we were going to be more true to the sport. So for the first time in season 8, you saw arguments, you saw fights, you saw swearing, you heard swearing.
Right.
Those things weren't edited out. We showed what happens in a poker tournament.
I remember those early World Poker Tour shows. I mean, you're like, you guys are... glossing over and making people like Vinny Vin look like he's this like friggin' like just clean as a whistle cult hero, and you're like, no, it's not quite like that. So, but it's good though. It's good.
Well, and I don't think, you know, it's like the early days of television. You look back at I love old television. You look back at the 40s, 50s, and it almost seems silly, right? You almost go back and go, the audience wouldn't buy it now. And I think it's the same way. I don't think the audience would buy it anymore. Right. I don't think that they should. We have a very it's an intelligent audience. They understand the product. It's not about teaching people about
anymore,
what this is about. You know, it's about really showing this is a sport.
Yeah, some of the conversations just, you know, friends in the industry and on the TV side I've had is that we need to embrace the degeneracy a little bit more of just the individuals and of the industry that we're in, because they actually produce some pretty interesting stories.
Oh, you know, I say all the time, you know, I'm here for these wonderful characters, which were the players here, who came and made fascinating stories. I love the television. I'm a television buff, but we take great pride at WPT in telling a three-act story. And this is how this plays out and how the drama and what happens and who the people are. Mm-hmm. Those characters are very, very important to us. And so, we don't have to run away from that.
Right.
You know, we can show that. I hope we're going to do that more on 8/8.
And also with Tony, with that Bette Reyes Fold movie that came out. He's kind of a shining star of that as well. So, good increased exposure there. Funny story, you were at the premiere. When I left, I think it was actually next to Tony and that Martin or Marvin guy. I was in the very back, though, and one of the last people to leave. You had just walked by, and two of the people that were walking to clean up were absolutely 100% convinced that the President of the United States had just walked by them.
Of course.
And I started cracking up. The girl turns to me. She goes, "Oh, my God, I believe that was the President." And I started cracking up. How often do you get that?
Definitely daily. It's funny because, you know, I just last night I was in Shanghai, or just came from Shanghai, and I get a lot there because his brother, President Obama's brother, half brother, lived in Shanghai, and but I get it quite a lot. We had
this girl was 100% convinced, 100% convinced as after you walked by.
Well, it also helps when, you know, they're saying, "Oh, that's the president of," and then they don't hear the rest of it. It's the WPT. Ironically, as you can see, I was engaged at the White House, you know.
Oh, wow.
So I was, my engagement was at the White House.
Okay.
So I have a number of photos up on that were in the internet of me at the White House. And people love to use that as the
that's great, the
combination. Yeah, but we I get it all the time. It is I don't mind it at all. The two things in my life,
there's worse people you could be compared to.
I have three things in my life that bridge the fact that you wouldn't get it, but I do have a sense. There's a sense of shyness to me, which is when I was 16 years old, I inherited a 56 Chevy.
Okay,
and
kind of cool.
That's the coolest thing in the world.
Yeah.
Because what happens is old guys who never want to, don't know how to talk to you, will come up to you and go, "What kind of engine do you have that?"
Yeah.
And they start in these great conversations. Yeah. And then the second is that I look like the President of the United States. And some people say I speak a little bit like the President of the United States. And then the third is that I have this drink named after me at the SLS Hotel.
I heard about this. Tell me about the drink of that. Yeah, but tell me about this and how this happened.
So I, on my 100th dinner at the bazaar at the SLS, I had stayed there, you know, quite a lot.
Now, who's keeping track of the fact that you've had 100 dinners?
I didn't know, but at the beginning, maybe the 40th, I found out they were.
Okay.
And so they did this incredible 23-course dinner for me and Jose Andres, who I'd become
for the 100th dinner?
For my 100th dinner.
Okay.
Jose Andres, the chef I'd become very good friends with, came out and did this thing. Antonio Sfondiari, one of my good friends, had come to, he wrote some article about it called The Dinner. And afterwards, they said, well, we're going to do something special for you. We're going to name a drink after you. And I said, oh, my God, that's fantastic. I saw them pitching drinks and stuff. And they created this incredible scotch-based cocktail that is, this is what it looks like before, after the liquid nitrogen. You see that?
Yep.
The liquid nitrogen comes out. It is a Johnny Walker Black, and then they mist a Lafroid scotch. They have an ice ball in there. They're packing down this down with liquid nitrogen and light an orange rind on fire, and muddled blackberries. The whole, it's just incredible. And so you can go into the SOS and ask for the Pliska, and they will...
How much input did you have into the making?
I had none, and so...
But they're pitching you, like, would you like, does this sound good, or does this sound good?
No, the lead mixologist, Robert Floyd, came back and said, we've created a drink, but we think that this is kind of hits your personality. They knew me quite a bit from there, and they said, this is why. And so if you go in there, they'll explain why it is that they made it. The question is, do I like it? It is my favorite drink, and it's not because it's mine. It is a fantastic...
You can admit that because it's like... I could have... I don't know what a good example is. You could put gasoline in in a glass, and if a high-end hotel decided to name, or bar decided to name, then it's my favorite drink. I'm going to tell everybody it's my favorite. So it's cool. You can tell me.
It's incredible. Right. Although it has created that. I did tell them, what happens, though, is when you go in and somebody, you walk up to the bar and they say, and there's the guy that it was named after.
Yeah.
What happens at that point is you don't say, buy a drink for her and not him and him.
Right.
And you go, okay, what the heck? Right. I'll take these, you know, I'll take the drink. But I used to say, other than flying lessons, I can't imagine a greater gift. Now I think it's probably one of the greatest gifts anybody's given.
That's pretty solid. That's a tough one on the top. So World Poker Tour this season, moving forward, where do you see the company progressing?
So I think we're seeing more global expansion. I think you'll see more into Asia.
Okay. Let's talk about China.
Yeah. So we had our...
See where the company's going. China.
So our first attempt into China, or our first initial actions into China, were several years ago, where we sponsored a tour by the sports ministry called Tuolaji, or Tractor Poker. It's not the poker that we're used to. It's more like a bridge. But it was able... It enabled us to kind of get the WPT name out, and it was successful in getting appearances and having some TV shows. But what we did at Sanya was really the first sanctioned Texas Hold'em event, and it turned out to be incredibly successful. The energy, the enthusiasm, the governor of the island was there, there was kind of these internal fireworks when it went off, they had security and so much press. They had one of the most famous singers in China come down for the event, and it was spectacular. The players were enthusiastic and happy to be there, and all of that enthusiasm that, you know, you remember in the early days of poker is being recaptured, and it is just igniting in China. So I think that you're going to see more of that. We're going to have another event.
You may not be aware of this, Adam, but China actually has a very large population. So that would be a good one.
Yes, I did.
So that would be a good base to get energized on the game.
I did hear that. So they say, and of course, they have terrific players. You know, that were there and players that have have been associated with the WPT in the past. So Johnny Chen and. A number of players there. So we expect, you know, more global expansion. I think that, our deal, we kind of got a little off on the Fox deals, but those two Fox deals are large for us. Number one, it's the first time that WPT has signed a three-year deal. So
for
the next 3 years, you're seeing the WPT main tour on FSN, which has had record... ratings and is continue to expand, and on A8, we will be one of the primetime shows on FS1, and so that you know, FS1 is the first significant attempt at doing a sports network opposite of ESPN. Fox has put basically all of their resources behind it. They will launch next month, and we will have, as I said, we'll be one of the prime
like flagship program.
Flagship program, yeah.
Okay, so it's a good time to be. It's a good time to be back on board, I guess, with the World Poker Tour. Like, World Poker Tour is going good places. And I was telling somebody before I came up here for this podcast, in a lot of ways, I almost feel like WPT, WSOP as well, HPT as well. It's like when you're a late night talk show host. You just kind of need to be around long enough, and then eventually, like, you're an institution, and everything kind of works itself out.
Yeah.
Like what happened with Kimmel, the guy that you guys brought in with Ben Stein's money. And that's, in a way, I kind of feel like that's where, WPT is right now. It's just, you've got some longevity, some history, and it's all going to kind of work out.
Well, I think it's funny you mention that, because I look now at the WPT Champions Cup.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been that has become such a symbol for the WPT, and everyone takes this, so seriously now. I literally had one of the champions, the name was not up on before one event to the next, and was so bothered.
Yeah.
Like by the time I wanted to come down and explain myself, and he had tears in his eyes, I mean, the Champions Cup and being able to put your name on that. And, of course, when you see those names on there, and we've actually added one other thing now to it this year, which is if you – maybe I'm making an announcement too soon. What the heck? I'm going to make the announcement.
Let's make the announcement.
If you are a multiple champion, you'll now – your name will not only be on there, but it will be we will also have a diamond for every additional event that you make. So when you see the Champions Cup, you can distinguish the multiple champions by the diamonds that will be by their name that are on there. But it's great to see, and it's wonderful to look at those names and see the cards that they won with, and to look, and everybody gets on there realizes, wow, you got quite a legacy to be. And to be associated with. It's quite nice.
Well, thank you for taking the time.
Oh, thank you.
And doing the Wicked Chops podcast. Gavin, sorry you were not part of this one. We will have more Gavin Smith in the future. But best of luck to World Poker Tour moving forward, and I hope we get to do this again.
I hope so. Thank you. You're welcome anytime. Appreciate it.